I've got a suggestion to make. I says, let's keep he and his parents here for another day or two or a day. This was the first day we were of the series that mm-hmm. we worked this kid out. I said, let's keep him, give him a day's rest, keep him here and his parents here, you know, at the hotel and let him see another game. Then we'll bring him back down and we'll turn him around where that wind isn't against the thing and see if the ball is saying, well, it proved that it didn't have nearly the effect.
Straighten it out.
Yeah.
Huh?
Well, it didn't have the effect of this.
Yeah.
And he said, what do you think? I said, I don't know. I said, but I think you'd be smart if you, since you asked me my candid opinion, I said, I think it'd be smart if you left Pi have him. So that was right in his alley. See.
Did Trainer sign him up?
I you know what? I couldn't tell you what had happened to him, but I doubt it.
Would you save South worth $65,000 or save the
about
Braves?
About 90.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
See, at that time, the Braves were, boy, they were signing every, lots of people. That's when Sane and Spahn went on a strike.
Oh, is that
right? Yeah, they gave
I didn't
Donatelli,
hear about that.
No, not Donatelli, the big left-hand pitcher. Oh, they gave him a bundle, like $100,000. And so the two of them went up to the office and said, how come you couldn't give us a raise?
Yeah.
They both had a good year.
Johnny Antonelli. Yeah.
And he says, you didn't give us any raise or the amount of salary that we wanted, whatever it was. And you told us you couldn't afford it, yet you give a guy a nonentity that kind of money.
Right.
They got their money.
In those days, you couldn't, you took what they got.
I mean,
were you a good bargainer?
Hell no, I had to take what it was. it or leave it.
Wow.
Sure. My whole life was that way, even when I started coaching.
Is that right?
Well, then anyhow,
didn't have a lot of bargaining power.
At the end of the season, Billy asked me if I would go back to Milwaukee. This was when the heck was this? 1948.
48. Well, that was the year they won the pennant.
Yeah.
So you were with the 48 Brewers.
Yeah. 47. I was at Boston. 48 was when Boston won the pennant.
Right.
But Billy, at the end of the 47 season in Boston, asked me if I would like to go to Milwaukee for the next year and be a coach over there for Nick Culler.
My favorite team.
So
I could tell. Otto Denning? Was it you?
No.
Heinz Becker at first.
He was a first baseman.
Skippy Roberg.
Yeah.
Damon Phillips.
Damon Phillips. Two good guys.
Two good guys?
Yeah, wonderful.
Gilly Gillenwater, was he
in
the team
Gilly
then?
Yeah, Gilly Gillenwater.
And
Heinz Becker, yeah.
Yeah, who killed a guy later,
I guess.
But that was my favorite. Fernandes.
Yeah, and
was in left. I was there in the opening game that year.
See, and now that spring, and I went, and he said, I promise you one thing. He said, I told, I don't know if it was Ernie White or Jimmy Brown, one of them, he said, I promised them a job if they wanted it. He said, if they don't take it, I want you to come back to Boston. I said, well, that's fair enough. That's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyhow, I went to spring training, and I had the pleasure of working with Crandall. Oh, and he picked up things that quick.
Got to ask you a question. I saw him play his first game with the Brewers. My memory says he was introduced as Pinky Crandall. Am I wrong?
He could have been Pinky.
Okay.
See, I had him when he just came out of school.
Oh.
And then he went from there, he went to in the 3I League.
What was different about him?
He had good mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
He was disturbed about a few things he wasn't so sure of. And I told him, don't worry about those things. They'll come naturally, and they're not of any consequence anyway. And I showed him how to do things my way. I said I had a reputation being a fairly good defensive catcher. And an easier way of doing things rather than falling all over and all.
Yeah.
And he picked up things so good. And during spring training, I noticed, oh boy, he picked it up, and he was throwing players out with balls that were off the plate, like curveballs down and away and things like that. He did it so much better than the catcher we had at Milwaukee, and I can't think of his name. Wonderful guy. I hated to have to do it. Anyhow, I had to give...
There was a guy named Joe Stevenson with him for a little while.
No,
that was in 45.
Yeah, that was later.
Yeah.
Or that was some other time.
Yeah.
Oh. The guy was a real good catcher and had a real good arm, but he could not do those other little things that Crandall could do. So it came to a choice, and I had to give him my honest, candid opinion.
Yeah.
Who would you recommend for the big leagues? The kid that's catching there or Crandall? I said, I would take Crandall from my observation. He's got as good as arm, and but he can do these other little things so much better.
Paul Burris?
Paul Burris. I said, Crandall is a, will become a leader, I think.
Well, you know,
where Paul was, oh, what a wonderful kid he was. But it's happy-go-lucky.
Yeah.
Where the other guy was business. And that was another thing.
So Crandall was really serious about the guy. He was a good student.
Yeah, real good student. Not that Burris wasn't, but he just didn't have that little extra that the other guy had. And I could envision Crandall being the better catcher of the two in the long run. Geez, and I hated to do it because I just love Burris. Just love him.
Yeah, but that's got to be one of the hard parts of the game.
That's
that
hard
and giving people their release because you know you've been there.
Now, when the season is over and I'm home, I had a home on the east shore of Silver Lake over here. It's a good thing you didn't get over here. You wouldn't be here at the host.
You're right.
You wouldn't
be here
yet. Well, anyhow, I got a call one day and it's from Frank Lane. And he says, Ray says, how would you like to become one of my coaches, my pitching coach, at the White Sox?
Wow.
See, and then
did he know you before that?
I congratulated him right away. He was president of the American Association. When I'd be working with the pitchers, Frank would be out there sitting in the sun. And then wherever, so often, wherever we went, here would be Frank. And I thought, geez, never give it a thought, really. And then later on, I thought, geez, that's funny. Frank Lane, president of the American League. Then I thought he was following the club around. It turned out that he was scouting me because he already had the job
in
line in Chicago.
Right?
Yeah. And that's, so I says, it was either stay at Milwaukee or wait till a job open up back at Boston. And so he said, how would you like to come with me at the White Sox, you know, be my pitching coach?
That
was already squared.
It
was already squared away with the manager, you know. And then
you were back in the big league.
So I said to him, I said, Jesus, is the Pope Catholic? He laughed. And I said, well, I got to get permission. He said, I've already talked to the people.
Is that right?
And he says, including the manager that's going to be here, who put in a good word for you.
Now, you know, that had to be all that hard work then. That's when the real payoff came.
Yeah. And I was there 2 years and I never got a raise. And finally I went up and I asked Frank for a raise. And Frank was madder than head the devil because he just got through arguing with a couple of the players and their wives. And he says, and their wives. And now I come in and ask him for a raise. And he about ready to throw me out. I said, Jesus, Frank, I didn't mean to disturb, you know, throw a monkey wrench into things here. But I said, I just got one thing to say to you. I said, if I haven't vindicated you and your judgment on me in the last 2 years, then I don't deserve a raise. Oh, in the meantime, he says to me, he says, see those stack of letters? He says, about 600 guys want your job. And I says, give it to them.
How did it finally turn out then?
Well, then I got a raise.
What were you making in those days, if I can ask?
Oh, no, I don't like to reveal it.
Okay, but it was...
I'm ashamed.
Now, my recollection was that ballplayers were still made good salaries, but not astronomical like it is.
I must tell you something. The 1 year over at Pittsburgh, when I was there, Paul Wiener held out until the last day the game was ready to start. Mm. He wouldn't sign, and neither would Ben Springer sign him. And finally they signed him. And you know what he was holding out for? $12,500.
Oh, is that right?
He was been a star since 1927.
Sure. Yeah. Oh my. But you were at their mercy, though.
Yeah.
It's
pretty much.
That or...
Yeah. Well, you couldn't get away. You were locked in.
Yeah. No choice.
No choice.
Well, let me back you up a little bit because it reminds me of my boyhood a little bit. What was Nick Cullup like?
Wonderful guy.
Was he?
Yeah.
He was. I didn't realize what a great player he was in the minor leagues.
Now there's a guy. Didn't make it in the big league.
Yeah, but he was a fearsome hitter in the and
a good
pitcher.
And a very good competitive player.
Yeah, old tomato face.
Yeah, I used to call him tomato too. The only time I ever saw him get real mad was when he went out to take out the pitcher. you know. Mm-hmm. He was very furious trying to get the guy five innings and, you know, yeah. to get his win.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy handed, Nix is giving the ball. When the guy handed him the ball, he went and flipped it back over his head.
It showed him up.
Showed him up, and yeah. that neck blew that far.
Yeah.
And I can still see Nick tell him, get your ass in the clubhouse, I'll see you in a few minutes. Mm. And then, I was sitting in the dugout, and I saw him storming. The closer he got, the faster he went, the redder he got.
Yeah.
And I says, I better run in there. And he had that guy, he didn't have him by the neck, but he had him by the shoulders of the uniform, and he had him right up in the air.
Oh.
If you ever do that to me again, he says, I'll hang you up here and leave you.
Yeah.
And
it's probably the worst thing you can do to
somebody. And I run in because I knew that he had some heart trouble too. See?
Yeah.
And I said, come on, Nick, it isn't worth it.
Mm.
And then he calmed down. But as he walked out the door, he says, by the way, he says, you're not going to pitch for me ever again. He says, but I'll tell you where you can. I give you my credit card. You can call around.
Wow.
But isn't that awful?
The guy
was noted for that smart ass story.
Okay, well, he paid for it, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
He wasn't that good a pitcher.
Well, you know, there's a lesson there. If you're not that good of a pitcher, especially, you don't show up your manager, especially in front of everybody.
Yeah.
You know what? I remember a scene from that year. Maybe it was the year before. But you know, in reference to today, I remember standing in a corner at 8th and Chambers waiting for the bus after the games. And Paul Burris and remember Norman Roy?
Yeah, he was one of my pitchers.
And Joe Mack played first base. Oh, they got on the bus and they were talking about, I mean, they got on the darn bus.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have a cattle. They got on a bus like I did.
Yeah.
And now today,
yeah.
I'm not saying they should get on buses, but there's so much distance now.
Oh, it is. It's.
Mm.
Well, years ago, you know, we weren't transported to the ballpark from the hotel. We had to go in cabs.
Oh, is that right?
Get a cab and go back. Yeah.
Well, how about traveling in the minor leagues in those days? What was that like? Real first class, huh?
Oh yeah. With a brown bag.
Yes.
Suit, underwear, maybe. Yeah, well, we have some little dime store suitcase.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that was rough.
What happened?
When I was in that Southeastern League in Montgomery, we had some long hauls.
Mm.
Yeah, we'd leave a Saturday, we'd leave a game leave the park right after a game, and heck, we'd get to the next town almost ready to play the game again.
Oh,
it would be rough.
Grueling, yeah.
Oh, they got it made today. I'll tell you something different. Something not different. But I'll tell you something, too, that, like, as time went on, we had buses meet us at the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
We all left at the same time. The bus waited and took us back to the hotel. When the season was over, you paid your transportation to get home. It used to be we got home the best way we could.
Yeah.
And if you were ever released, you got home the best way you
could. Wow.
But it's different today.
Yeah. Well, everything's union, too.
Yeah.
Well, which is good in a way. In another way. You know, I guess I suddenly realized the other day that whether the designated hitter stays or not is not up to baseball. It's up to the union.
Is it?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Because they've got so many high-priced players that are DHing.
Oh, yeah.
That they're not going to just... Anyway, we're back in 39. Now, Rip Sewell, how did he develop that blooper ball?
He was always fooling with it.
Was he?
Fooled with it in the pen.
Yeah?
And got to using it. Did,
did it work?
Oh, sure. It
yeah?
kept him around the base.
I remember what Ted Williams said that went off him in the All-Star game.
Oh,
though.
Yeah. Yeah. He really cracked that one.
Yeah.
But not too many of them hit the thing. But you see where it was effective, the hitters had kind of, after they learned about it, read about it, seen it, had been pitched to it, they'd look for it, and then his fastball would be that much faster.
Oh, yeah. So it's all
it had a psychological effect as well as a physical effect. And a lot of guys would try to kill it.
Mm. Oh, yeah, it must have looked this big coming in.
You're talking about Barna. He had a hell of a time hitting him with Barna.
Is that right?
Barna hit a little bit, like Ruth a little bit, you know,
he'd
lunge, and that big bloop thing, he'd take a swish at it. So I told him, I said, and he'd come back just storming. He says, the guy making such a dummy of him. I says, why don't you make a dummy of him? I said, why don't you bunt the damn thing with your speed?
Yeah.
And he said, bunt, big guy like me, bunt. He says, they'd laugh me out of the ballpark. I said, with your speed? I said, maybe he won't throw it to you again. or you bring the infield in.
Yeah.
Now you got
to
Yeah. So he beat out the first bunt, dropped a beauty. He just stood there like he was going to take it, and all of a sudden, boom. And nobody was charging or ready for it. He just dropped it down the third baseline. No play on him. He got the first base. As he come walking back, he looked at me, and he took his hat. You know, that was the last time he bunted.
Is that right?
He wouldn't do it. He'd pull his pride.
You're too big of a guy. You know, another guy I saw do that one time was Johnny Hutchings when he was in the minor leagues with Indianapolis.
Yeah.
I didn't know if he picked it up from Sewell or something.
I don't
He
know.
Tried it a couple of times.
He was a good imitator.
Was he?
Yeah.
Well, now, you in 38, let's see, that was just finished three games back.
That was really the biggest disappointment of my life.
Is that right?
I mean, here we had led the league all season long, and it started on about like Labor Day. We lost a doubleheader to the Cubs.
Mm.
People were standing all over that Pittsburgh ballpark. If you just hit a ball pretty good, it was a double, you know.
Yeah.
And I can still see Hack hitting one in the crowd and beating us. Anyway, we lost a doubleheader on the Labor Day. I think we had a 7.5 or 8-game lead at the time.
Oh.
And we just kept going down. Like I told you before, we went into Chicago with a 2.5-game lead, came out a half game behind. Every time we'd hit and run, we'd hit a line drive. Somebody'd be double off.
So it just,
Paul Wehner dropped a fly ball, which was very unaccustomed.
Yeah.
And lots of things. Archie Vaughn, we couldn't play, who was our star player, our best RBR.
Heck of a
hitter. Best base runner, best everything.
Yeah.
He wakes up in the morning after riding the train all night with a kink in his neck and can't even get his foot.
Oh, man.
So everything,
it's almost like it wasn't to be.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, you're probably better off in sixth place than because your teams were never...
Yeah.
That was the best team you must have been.
And that was a great, great, great disappointment. Because, you know, that was looked like my last and only chance to ever be in the big league.
Oh. And that was in 38.
38.
And then in 39, back down to sixth place.
Oh, everything went wrong.
Yeah. Now, a couple of interesting guys. Chuck Klein was there at the end of the year, and Bob Elliott was just starting. So you had some guys leaving, some guys coming in.
Yeah, that's right. We went to spring training in 40 when Frisch took over the club, and he had one of his meetings, boy. About hustle and then about him saying, well, I never finished in second division and we aren't going to finish second division here. And then he went on to tell if there's any drinking to be done, it's going to be costly.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Now, how did he contrast with Trainer as a manager?
Pye was very quiet and almost unassuming.
Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Pye never had, didn't say too much.
Hmm.
And, of course, Jewel Enns was his relay man. He was a coach.
Okay.
And I can still see, when you mentioned Chuck Klein, and he said to the Wehners, too, there'll be no more of this monkey business.
Yeah, because they were drinkers. I know Paul was.
But he was a harmless drinker.
Is that right?
You see, what happens for the many kids, like you were talking about Hack before,
yeah.
He couldn't go any place but what somebody didn't want to buy him.
Yeah.
Paul couldn't go. Paul was a little more solitary. He had friends that liked him. And it was difficult not to have one or two with him.
Yeah.
And it always leads to more.
Yeah.
Paul would never take anybody with him. Paul would never take a young fellow with him.
Is that right?
No, he was never misleading. What the heck was that going? Oh, getting back to spring training, and Chuck Klein, he came to Chuck, and he jumped on him. Well, all of a sudden, one day in spring training, one of the coaches took over the start of the day. Frank wasn't there. And all of a sudden, about an hour later, Frank comes in, calls everybody in. He has a meeting with him. He says, I told you, going to be costly to anybody who I caught drinking. Well, he happened to find a half a pint of booze in Chuck Klein's locker.
Mm.
I'm talking, not his locker, but at home at the hotel in his closet.
Yeah.
And he come back out and fired him right in front of everybody.
Right? No kidding.
And then Chuck got mad. And Chuck jumped up and he says, I don't mind you firing me. You had warned me. But you've got no damn business going into my room and searching my clothes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyhow, Chuck was gone. I mean, it was different in those days.
I guess you could never do that in a million years today.
No.
You'd have a lawsuit and a half a dozen other things. But what happened in 39?
Everything went backwards. We couldn't do anything right. Mm-hmm. I remember...
Same team, basically.
Yeah, I remember having said the wrong thing one day, and it went into the paper. One of the writers says, "What has happened that your club is doing so badly?" I said, "Well, we blew the pennant in Chicago, and we aren't over the effects yet." Mm-hmm. Didn't mean anything by it, but it made it for a story.
Yeah.
And from that day on, boy, did I keep my mouth shut around writers.
I would get, yeah.
And I always told them, I says, "I would love to help you. I will never make a condescending remark about anybody." The old adage was, if you can't say anything good, don't say anything bad about anybody.
But you didn't trust them so much after that.
Well, it wasn't that I didn't trust them. I knew that they had a job to do.
Yeah.
And television was the forerunner of everything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, by the time the newspapers come out, it was second. And they had to come up with a different style of type of stories. Well, anyhow, then I always felt like I was never the one to say anything about you or the other one of them. If anything was to be revealed, it should come from the manager.
Yeah.
See, I wouldn't overrun, my...
But you learned from that, too.
Yeah.
But there was probably, sounds like it was probably true, though, is that shock of Chicago in 38.
I don't know what everybody was.
And then 40 caught 106 games in 1940. That was with Frisch.
Yeah, and that was still with Pye. Caught very little with Frisch.
Okay, that's right. Yeah, 19. That's right. That you ended up in Boston that year. Yeah, 39 was with Frisch, and then 40 you started off with
Frisch.
With Frisch.
And about, I don't know, April, June or sometime, I was traded to Boston.
Okay.
You know how I got traded?
Uh-uh.
We blew a ball game in the Polo Grounds. I didn't get traded because of that.
Yeah.
But we blew a ball game in the Polo Grounds, and Frisch was storming. And we all got back up into the clubhouse after the game, and he's ripping it, giving everybody hell, going from one locker to the other.
Yeah.
And he comes down to me, and he says, "And you," he says, "get your ass up to Boston." He says, "I just dumped you."
Is that right?
That's how I was told to go to Boston.
Oh, man. Oh.
So.
Gee. Yeah. Not good human relations.
No, well, you see, that's the reason.
Now, how did you feel about that? Were you glad to get out
of
there? Or
no. I says jumping from the firing pan into the fire because...
You're back with Casey again.
Yeah, but Casey and I was having our fusses.
Ah. Okay. Gee.
That's why I said jumping from the firing pan into the fire.
Yeah.
But when I got back up there, it was a little different with Case.
He had changed a little bit?
Yeah. You do things in a grossly animated fashion sometimes because your temper is there. And
sure.
You wish you hadn't said it.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of emotions in the game.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
So, now Al Lopez caught a little bit there again in 42.
How I lose my words.
No, I haven't noticed.
Yeah, I get stuck for a word, and then I'm done.
I really haven't noticed.
No, and I see you looking at me, and then I can't think of what. No,
but it always comes back again.
Later on, maybe,
yeah,
or maybe on your way home.
Listen, where do you get to be as old as me, Ray? Then
yeah,
you'll know. Okay.
You know.
And then
I'm pushing 89.
Well, my dad's 80. It'll be 87 this year. Mm-hmm. So great Packers fan, loves baseball. But he said he saw his last game last year. He doesn't ever want to go again. So 41, then, you caught 120 games that year. Which, and then Phil, that's when Babe Dahlgren was
there for a while, and then Buddy Hassett was there. And I got married in 1940.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Ah. Okay. Now, an old sweetheart, or was that somebody who had just...
Yeah. Known each other, families known each other for years.
Is that right? Yes.
My wife is not like me. She's very, very quiet. Very quiet. Yeah. In her mannerisms and everything.
Yeah.
A lot of people at baseball for a long while mistook her for So you're scared to death, you know.
Ah. Well, it had to be, you know, because being married to a ball player has got to be tough sometimes.
Oh, yes, but she understood the thing that never once did she ever complain.
Is that right?
Never once.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Never.
So that, and then, so 41, caught 120 games. How'd you end up in with the Giants then?
That's what I wanted to
know. Here you are.
They sold me to the Giants, and Bill Terry, because of my hamming in the pitches, that year I caught Salvo, I think, 5 shutouts.
Wow.
And today, you don't even see 5 complete games.
That's right.
I must tell you something, the complete game thing.
Yeah.
In 1954, the Cleveland Ball Club pitched a total of 77 complete games.
Isn't that
so? No, you don't get 7.
No, it's a thing of the past.
Of course, they had some terrific pitchers.
Oh, yeah.
And we even at Chicago had a bunch of, you know, complete games.
Yeah.
And we didn't have the run-producing club. But I don't know what it is. Why it is.
It's everybody's a specialist.
Yeah.
A ninth inning specialist or get out one right-handed batter specialist. And
it's a joke.
Well, now that's okay. So 40, you were several years with the Giants.
Well, you're talking about how I got over there.
Yeah.
Well, anyhow, Terry bought me. He was general manager for the Giants.
Yeah.
And he wanted me to go to Jersey City to handle the pitching over there. They had some young pitchers because, you know, I had a pretty good reputation established about that time. Or so somebody thought.
You had fooled a lot of people,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, really. And I wouldn't go. I said, no. I quit before. Now I'm going back again, you know. I said, what the hell? And so I was in Florida at that time when my wife and I were spending the winter in Florida. And that's when I got news of going to the Giants. To the Giants.
Yeah.